We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. On today's program, some popular replacement series in the genre of mystery and suspense. Later on, we'll enjoy Crime and Punishment, starring Peter Lorre. But first, let's escape. Escape, radio's greatest series of high adventure, began on CBS in July of 1947 as a popular replacement program for suspense. With its small, sustaining budget, Escape didn't have the higher-priced film stars who often appeared on suspense. But instead, a steady group of radio's old pros put the series together. William Conrad and Paul Frees did the announcing. In the early days, Escape took its stories from the classics of adventure. Many of the stories dramatized in Escape became radio classics and were later redone on suspense. The producer-director for much of the run was the talented Norman MacDonald. The program ended in September of 1954. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Escape and The Killer Mind, starring Lou Krugman, from February of 1951. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else? We offer you Escape.
Escape with us now to England and the story of a hard rock miner trapped in a deserted mine beneath the icy waters off the Cornish coast, as Hammond Innes tells it in his gripping tale, The Killer Mine.
Rain had stopped when I reached Penzance just before dark. At the waterfront, there were men dressed much the same as myself, in seamen's jerseys and jacket. Nobody took any notice of me, and I suddenly felt at ease for the first time since I landed in England. I lit a cigarette, fished out of my pocket a worn and dirty bit of notepaper which bore Dave Tanner's address. 2 Harbour Terrace, Penzance, Cornwall. I read the note again. Dear Jim, I hear things aren't what they were in Italy. If you're getting tired of it and want a change of air, I can fix you up with a job in England, no questions asked. It's a mining job and right up your street, your old chum, Dave. Well, up to now, I'd been lucky. No questions had been asked. So I went to meet my old chum at number 2 Harbour Terrace.
Yes?
Mr. Tanner in?
Who?
Tanner, Mr. Dave Tanner.
Oh, nobody of that name lives here.
Oh, well, he's an old friend of mine. I've come a long way to see him. Look, here's the letter he sent me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But look, you don't have to be afraid. I'm not a cop. He's a Welshman. Dark hair and eyes, a bit of a limp.
Oh, it's... maybe it's Mr. Jones you're wanting, but he's not here now either.
Do you know when he'll be back?
No, I,
Hello. You're hurt.
Oh, no, I...
That's blood on your hands.
Oh, one of the lodgers. He cut himself on glass.
Davey's here, isn't he? He's here and he's hurt.
No. You can't come in.
Move over. You... Where is he?
I tell you, you're mistaken.
What the devil are you doing, girl? Come and fix this arm before I lose any more blood. Who was it anyway?
It's all right, Dave. It's me, Jim Price.
Jim Price? Fine time for visiting, you've chosen. Well, come on up, man. I'm bleeding to death.
We went upstairs. Inside his room, Dave was sitting, white-faced, on the edge of a bed. He winced as the girl daubed iodine into what was obviously a bullet wound. Then the bandage went on.
Not too tight, girl.
What happened, Dave?
Nothing. It's all right. Tell you later. I'm glad to see you, Bach. Sil.
Yes, Davy?
Wrap up some food. Find another raincoat.
But you can't go out.
Don't argue, girl. It's time to go now.
All right.
That's better. Now we can talk. You've come over for that job, eh?
Yes.
Got a show with no questions asked?
I managed. It cost me my last farthing, though. I've got no papers.
You got a show. That's what matters. Well, Jim, it's a mining job, as I told you. Here, help me on with my coat.
Yes.
Easy. There. I'll be shut of this place. Your way's the same as mine. I'll tell you about the job as we go.
Where? Where do we go?
Cripple's East, tin mine. There's more to it than that.
Oh?
Come on. We'll meet the girl downstairs. I've got to get out. Come along.
Davy, here's sandwiches and an old raincoat of Father's.
Give it to her. Now listen, Sam. Those clothes upstairs, burn them.
Yes.
Clean up everything. Anybody comes around asking questions, tell them you haven't seen me.
All right.
Not for 3 days.
Where can I get in touch with you?
You can't.
You'll come back?
Indeed, I will. But remember, you haven't seen me. And you don't know where I've gone.
I don't know.
That's true. You'll hear from me. Open the door, see if anyone's about.
Yes.
The street was deserted, and the rain had started again as we slipped out. We kept to mean, badly lit streets as we made our way out of the town. Then, at the top of a hill, we left the lights of Penzance behind us. We hadn't said a word until then.
We'll separate at Lunyon.
How far is that?
Oh, 8-9 miles.
Oh. Oh. Where are you going?
A farm. Be hiding up for a bit.
Oh, the police, maybe?
In a matter of speaking, at a fishing boat, Isle of Mull. We were carrying goods.
Mm-hmm. Liquor?
Of course. Yeah. Picked it up from an Italian boat. A revenue cutter boarded us. They insisted on taking the hatches off. I warned them not to. It was their own fault. I jumped for the other boat. That's when I got his bullet through the arm.
How did you get away?
We booby-trapped the hatches. When they opened them, she went up, sank. Just like that.
How many were killed?
What does it matter? They're after me, though.
What about me?
Oh, the job. I told you, if you want it, it's yours.
Where do I go? Who do I see?
Cripple's Ease, just down the road from Butler. Ask for Captain Manick. Tell him I sent you. Show him my letter.
That's all?
That's all. He'll tell you what it's about. Come on, I'll step out. I need to rest soon enough with this cursed arm.
It must have been nearly midnight when the little Welshman and I parted. He pointed the way to Cripple's Ease a mile further along, and then turned away, disappeared in the driving rain. Half an hour later, I found the huddle of abandoned mine buildings. And then against a crackle of lightning, I saw a house. I had reached Cripple's Ease and the job that was waiting for me.
What do you want?
I want to see Captain Manick.
I be Captain Manick. What do you want?
Dave Tanner sent me.
Who?
Dave Tanner. He told me to show you this letter.
Oh. Hmm. Come in.
My name's Jim Price. Davey said you had a mining job for me. I'm a miner. I was working in Italy.
Come in here. There's a fire. You can get warm. How long have you known Dave?
You were in the army together.
Where?
Italy, mostly. Casino.
Sit down. You're the deserter chap, aren't you? Oh, it's all right. Davey told me about it. We don't ask questions here. Does anyone know you're in England?
No, only Dave. This job you've got, how long will it take?
Not being a miner, I wouldn't know. I'd take a week. I'd give you a flat rate of £50 and another 100 if you can do it in 2 days.
A big tin strike?
No.
Oh, I don't see where...
All right, just a minute. Now, have a look at this chart. These mines are finished. There's nothing worth working in them anymore. I've got another use for it. You see that long gallery running down under the sea?
Yeah.
It's called the Mermaid. Nearly half a mile long. Now then, what I want you to do is to blow a hole in the seabed at the end of it.
Blow a hole in the seabed?
Yes. You see the slope of the gallery? It starts about 100 feet below the sea level. Then at the end, rises to, well, by my figures, 20 feet under the bed of the sea.
My job is to drill through that 20 feet and let the sea in, huh?
Yes. I can tell you it's getting risky running liquor into England through the usual channels.
I see.
Yes. This would be safer. Our boat spots a buoy which marks the entrance of the underwater mine. Lowers the cargo and we haul it through the mine up at the shore.
How?
A carriage drawn by a horse. Oh, it'll work. Even underwater, it'll work. I've had two men working on the shaft for a year now, straightening it out. All we need is a miner to finish the job. That's you.
It's nasty. Suppose the entrance gets jammed with rock after she blows.
No, I'll go down in a diving suit and clear it.
It's nasty. I haven't done undersea stuff.
But you know explosives and rock?
Yeah.
And there'll be nothing to it.
I don't know. What about Davey? Was he doing a job for you? Suppose the police get him and tie you up with it. What happens to me?
Oh, don't worry.
I don't like it.
Man, be sensible. You're a deserter from the British Army. You returned to England without papers. If not here, where would you work? I'd be offering you £150.
I should have stayed in Italy.
But you didn't?
No, I wanted to see Cornwall again. It was a mistake.
Not at all. Do what I ask and I'll see that you get a passage back to Italy.
No. No, it's too dangerous. I'm sorry, I'll take my chances somewhere else on another job.
Oh? And you leave me no alternative.
What do you mean?
I shall have to telephone the police in Penzance and inform them that the deserter has shown up, looking for a job.
After what you told me? Now make me laugh.
I'm quite a respectable man in these parts. I doubt that the authorities would take your word against mine.
You're bluffing. Nobody can force me to do anything.
You think not? No, stay where you are, Mr. Price. I wouldn't hesitate to shoot you. You see, I'm in rather a desperate position. It's taken me a long time to find a miner to do this job. I couldn't bear to see you refuse. You still have a moment to change your mind. Hello? Would you ring the police station for me, please?
He wasn't bluffing. I knew that I owned only a few seconds to decide. It was a choice of arrest, conviction as a deserter, or doing a job which might mean my life. I had run away from death once before. I suddenly realized that I'd been running ever since. I had to stop. I looked back at Manic, smiling and sure with his pistol pointed at me.
Well?
All right. Hang up. I'll do it. I'll blow up your bloody mind.
Escape, under the direction of Norman McDonald, returns in just a moment.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, back to Escape.
Manick put down the phone, opened a desk drawer, and took out some pound notes, handed me 10 and suggested I get some sleep. We were to start work at 5 in the morning. I was pocketing the money when the door behind us opened. I looked around and saw an elderly man enter.
I didn't know you'd anybody here, Henry.
It's all right, Father. This is Jim Price. He's going to work here a bit. He's a miner.
A miner, is he? Well, my boy, it is good to know there'll be a miner working here at last. I knew you'd see it my way sooner or later, Henry. At least we can make a start now.
Price is working for me, Father.
Working for you? Nonsense, he must work for me. I'll prove to the world that the Cornish mining industry isn't dead.
You may as well understand. I'm letting the sea into the Mermaid Gallery.
You're mad. You can't do it. I won't allow it.
That's what I'm going to do.
I won't allow it, I tell you. I won't.
You've no alternative. Mr. Price, perhaps you better leave us now. Go to the kitchen across the hall. One of the men will show you to your quarters.
All right. I went to the kitchen, could hear the argument raging through the hall. There were two men sitting by a fire with mugs in their hands. One like a diminutive monk with a pot belly and rosy cheeks, and the other a long, cadaverous-faced man who looked at me solemnly as I entered.
Blimey, another one. Sit down, chum, sit down. I say, you staying or passing through?
I'm going to work here. I'm a miner.
Lord love a duck. Is that slim? Now we don't have to worry about the ruddy roof falling in on us. My name's Fryer, Fryer O'Grady. You call me Fryer. And this here's Slim Matthews.
Jim Price.
Manick hired you to blow through the seabed?
Yes.
Does the old man know?
Yes, I just left.
Thought I heard Augie bogging.
It's going to be trouble.
I don't understand.
The old man's been working these mines all his life. Now he says he's found the richest tin strike in Cornwall.
Captain's right, though. Captain's right. Running liquor's tax-free. If you follow me. Too expensive to operate a mine these days.
I shouldn't want your job, Mr. Price. We've been sweating for a year down here. Funny feeling with all that sea over your head.
Oh, well, every man to his trade, I say. Come on, mate, I'll show you to your digs. Imagine you'll want to be upright, eh?
Thanks.
See you in the morning, Mr. Price.
The little cockney showed me to my room. It was about a half hour later that I heard the tap on my door. Yes? Mr. Manick.
I was afraid you might be asleep. Look, I got something to show you. My son tells me you're an experienced tinner. Have a look at this rock. Maybe you'll believe me.
Hey, that's tin, all right.
It is fabulous. The richest seam in the history of Cornish mining. Look at it. And my son, curse him, doesn't see it. He's going to let the sea into the mine. And he's brought you here to do it. You're the man who's going to wreck my life.
I'm sorry. It is a job, that's all.
You can't. You mustn't. I'd give you £50 more than he's offered if you don't do it.
What difference would it make if you'd only get another miner?
But that would take time. Don't you see? We would be rich.
I'm afraid...
It's all right, it's all right. Think about it. I know he holds something over your head. He does with everyone. Think about it and give me your answer tomorrow.
All right. I will. Good night.
That's it, Mr. Price.
What's the pit for, Captain? There, underneath the scaffolding there.
To catch the rock when you make the final blast.
Oh. Well, it might work.
As I told you, if it doesn't, I'll come down in a diving suit to clear it away.
You say there's 20 feet to get through?
Yes.
It's quite a bit of water seeping in now.
It'll be touchy, all right.
Granite, basalt from the feel of it. Oh. And if it cracks, anything might happen.
Yes. By the way, my father spoke to you last night, didn't he?
Yes.
Showed you the tin. Probably offered you more not to blow the mine. I hope you refused, because if you didn't, I can still notify the police.
I didn't tell him anything.
Good. Then you can start to work immediately. I'll send Fryer and Slim down to help you. And by the way, don't go wandering around too much. Some of these old tunnels run for miles and you can get lost. And stay out of the shaft that parallels this one. She's the old Come Lucky mine. There have been a lot of falls recently. If she caves in, she'll take in the sea and break through here.
I'll be careful. I've worked mines most of my life. But it gives you a funny feeling to be standing under the sea a half mile from shore and protected by 20 feet of rock. Rock that you're going to be drilling and blasting till there's only maybe 10 feet. Then you pray that it doesn't cave in until you're out of the way. Fryer and Slim came down and I started to drill holes for the explosives. As the rock fell away, little streams of water fell, soaking us. It was nasty work, all right.
They'll do it, chum.
That's enough for the first blow.
How many do you think you'll need?
Three, maybe four, depends. Give me the charges.
Here you are, Price boy. Lots of water there.
There's nothing to worry about yet.
I hope.
You and Slim better get up the tunnel when she goes.
I was hoping you'd stay there. I'm off. Good luck, chum.
The two men disappeared up the gallery, and I was left alone to explode the charge. I connected the wires, moved the exploder as far as it would stretch into the tunnel, and then I pressed the handle. The roof still held. A bit more water trickled in, but she still held. I went back to the entrance for a cup of coffee before starting again. As I approached the cage, which served as an elevator to the surface, I saw Captain Manning talking with another man. It was Dave Tanner.
You bloody fool! Why of all places did you have to come here?
I told you. The garret talked. I heard it on the wireless. I knew they wouldn't be thinking of looking for me here. It would be safer.
Safer? In broad daylight? Somebody must have seen you. The police will be all over us.
Nobody saw me.
How do you know? Price! You've got to be through that seabed by tonight.
Well, it's impossible. I can't do it.
Nothing's impossible. I can get you out of the country as soon as you've finished the job. You don't finish tonight and the police come. Well, what do you know? What does that mean?
Well, it can't be done. It's too much work for one man.
I put Fryer on the drill with you. He knows something about it. Tanner and myself will be clear of the rock after each blow.
Well, I'll try.
Good. You, Dave, stay out of sight. Down here. And keep my father out of here. Shoot him if you have to. You understand?
All right, all right.
We worked like madmen all day, drilling, blasting. We blew the rock three, four, five times, and still it wasn't enough. The water was coming in fast, filling the pit. Manic and Slim went back for new drills and charges. Fryer and I stayed on the scaffolding. And I don't like the looks of that.
What's up, mate?
Rock. Weaker up here.
Dangerous?
Maybe. Fetch me a pick.
All right. Hey, that don't do. Broken the end. The last charge must have done it. I'll often get another shot, young boy.
I sat on that scaffolding, smoked a cigarette. Water streamed down the slimy walls. And I waited for Fryer. 5 minutes passed. And then...
Mr. Price! Huh? Mr. Price!
Mr. Manick!
You've got to stop. You've got to. My tin! If you float to gallery, I'll never get it.
I'm sorry.
I won't let you, do you hear me?
There's nothing I can do.
It is mine. You're going to destroy it. I'll kill you. I'll kill you all.
But you better go to the surface. Mr. Manick is not safe here.
Ah, you'll find out. You'll find out how unsafe it is.
He
gone, and I knew he was up to something. I wanted to follow, but I remembered Captain Mannix's warning about the tunnels. The old man knew them, every twist, every turn. If he wanted to get rid of me, he could lead me to a maze from which I would never find my way out. So I stayed there until the captain and Slim came back.
We're getting ready to go, Price.
Your father was here.
What?
He's up to something.
How did he get by Dave?
I don't know.
You let him go. Come on, hurry. We've got to stop him.
What'll he do?
He's going to make sure that we can't let the sea in here. He's mad.
They come lucky.
Ah, that's what I'm afraid of. He knows that mine like a book. Come on.
The old man was somewhere in the mine which paralleled ours. If he knew of a fault in the wall, he could allow tons of seawater to rush in, breaking down the walls and flooding our tunnel. We had to stop him. Fryer joined us as we made our way into the adjoining galleries.
If he's got dynamite...
Don't say it, Captain.
I should have locked him up long ago.
What's that down there? Say.
It looks like a light.
It is. That's him.
He's working on something. The wall.
Father! Father! Stop it!
Stay where you are! Stay there!
Do as he said.
Don't come any closer.
Listen to me! Don't do it! You'll be killed!
He'll drown us all. Let's get out.
Say you let me have my tin.
Let him have it. Let him.
Look. He's lighting a match.
Say it. Say it, my son.
No, you old devil! Kill yourself! Go on!
You're not getting me killed.
Captain! Oh, come on, Tom. Go for it.
Captain Mannix lay on the wet tunnel floor, blood streaming from a wound where Fryer had struck him with a pick. We ran, the three of us, and behind was the mad old man with his charge of dynamite. We reached the mermaid gallery when it went off. We could hear the water pouring down as though from a great height. And then the more terrifying sound as the tons of sea swept through the maze of tunnels. We ran for the elevator, which could take us to safety, and the surface 100 feet above. And the water followed. You could hear the roar until it deafened you.
Wait, give me a hand. I twisted my ankle.
Sorry, Tom, call soup now.
I could see that blessed elevator so close. Slim and Fryer were almost there. Then the gate clanged and it started up.
No, wait. Don't leave me.
Use the ladder.
Somehow, I reached the ladder. Painfully started up the runs. It was a nightmare. And the water was the monster that you couldn't escape. Halfway up, I heard them in the cage.
Stop! They don't go any further.
Pull hard.
I'll try, but it won't. Hey, it won't. Ross, can you hear? Ross, are you on the ladder? Ross, we don't get in the eye. We're getting down. I said, climb.
I kept climbing, and the voices faded until I heard a gurgling scream. And then silence. And the water stopped its terrible sound. It had found sea level. When I got to the surface, I saw Dave Tanner. He was standing looking down at me with frightened eyes. And with him were three men in uniform. They were the police. I fell into their arms, crying. I tell you, I cried. I was so happy. I got away from that killer of mine.
Under the direction of Norman MacDonald, Escape has brought you The Killer Mind by Hammond Innes, especially adapted for Escape by Anthony Ellis. John Daner was starred as Jim. Featured in the cast were Eileen Erskine, Tony Barrett, Ray Lawrence, Wilms Herbert, Jay Novello, and Lou Krugman. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Del Castillo. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From February of 1951, it's been Escape and The Killer Mine. In a moment, Mystery in the Air with Peter Lorre starring in Crime and Punishment as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Mystery in the Air was a title given to at least two summertime crime mystery programs sponsored on NBC in the mid-1940s. A Mystery in the Air took place of the Abbott and Costello program in the summer beginning July 1947. This was a fine show starring Peter Lorre in dramatizations and performances as tormented, driven men. Harry Morgan, then known by the name Henry Morgan, was the announcer. Others supporting Lorre included Agnes Moorehead, Joe Kearns, and Herb Butterfield. The program ran as replacement series in the years 1945 and again in 1947. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre in Crime and Punishment, from September of 1947. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre, presented by Camel Cigarettes.
And it is now my great pleasure to confer our academic degree with honor on the most distinguished student of this class. Roderick Raskolnikov, step forward. In the history of our university, there have been few young men who've compared with him in mental brilliance, and few for whom the future held greater promise. Roderick, I've spoken for the university. Now I want to speak for myself. As a token of the esteem in which I hold you and your abilities, I want to present you with this watch.
Thank you, sir.
Well, read the inscription.
Inscription? To Roderick Raskolnikov, may his great gifts bring him the reward of honor and good fortune. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Roderick, my boy, I'm proud to have had you as one of us, and sad that you are leaving. Good luck to you, and God bless you.
Again tonight, Camel Cigarettes bring you Peter Lorre and the excitement of the great stories of the strange and unusual, of dark and compelling masterpieces culled from the four corners of world literature. Tonight, Crime and Punishment, adapted from the motion picture starring Peter Lorre and based on the novel by Fyodor Dostoevsky.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre, brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. It's your T-zone, that's T for taste and T for throat, that decides how well you like a cigarette. And the T-zones of millions of people are voting overwhelmingly for Camel. See if you don't agree that Camel's rich, full flavor is most appealing to your taste, that Camel's cool mildness is specially welcome to your throat. Try a Camel.
So I, Roderick Raskolnikov, went to the city to achieve honor and good fortune. But 1 year later, I had achieved neither. Oh, I had written one book, a book on crime, which I had to sell to a publisher for barely enough money to pay my first 6 months' rent. Oh, the reviews were very nice. Yes, one of them said, the subject is handled with such brilliance that one wonders whether it's the work of a genius or a great detective, or both. Genius or great detective. Can't eat reviews. All the time I was starving in a garret room. Come in. Oh, it's you, Mrs. Barnum.
Yes, it's me. I haven't had a penny out of you in 6 months. How much longer do you expect me to wait for my rent?
Well, can you stand the strain another half hour?
Oh, so you're going to pay me in half an hour?
Yes.
Just how are you going to raise the money?
Oh, that's very simple. I, I'm going to rob a bank.
Think you're funny, huh? Well, I don't. You're a disgrace to my house.
Maybe, but someday they'll put a sign on this house that I, Raskolnikov, had the privilege of starving here. I beg your pardon. Is there a pawnbroker? I think it's an old woman by the name of Leona. Does she live here?
Yes, one more flight up. I'll show you. Yeah. I'm going there myself.
Thank you very much. May I carry your package?
No. No, I can manage. It's this door here. Just ring the bell.
What do you want? Ah, it's you, Sonia. Come in. Who's this? One of your gentleman friends?
No, I met him on the stairs.
Well, what have you got this time?
This. This Bible.
And where did you steal this?
I didn't steal it. It's been in our family a long time.
What do you want for it?
The cover's inlaid with mother of pearl. Stones are garnet. Worth at least 100 rubles.
I'll give you 6 rubles for it.
But
if you don't want it, leave it. What have you got, mister?
I have a watch.
I'll take the 6.
Here you are.
You said 6 rubles. You gave me 1.
That's right, 6 rubles. Less 3 months interest for your shawl and 2 months on the necklace and silver buckles. That makes 5 rubles. 5 from 6 is 1 ruble. Well, what are you waiting for? Want your Bible back?
No.
Well, come on. Get out. Get out. Got a snipe. All right, mister. Let me see your watch.
Here.
To Radrik Raskolnikov.
That's me.
May his great gifts bring him the reward of honor and good fortune. It's inscribed. I can't give you as much.
I want 50 rubles on it.
I'll give you 10.
All right, give me the 10.
There you are. What are you staring at? Don't look at me like that.
I'm not looking. I'm not staring. I was watching you put the young lady's Bible and my watch into that trunk. That's all.
But I've got nothing in here. Nothing but a lot of trash. A lot of trash. Get out of here.
As you say.
Oh,
forgive me. Oh, it's you, Miss Sonia. What are you looking for?
My ruble. Dropped out of my hand when she pushed me out the door.
Somebody ought to push her straight into the next world. What use is all that money to her? Is her miserly life worth 100 others like you, Simon? I'd like to take her by the throat.
You shouldn't say things like that.
Oh, that black beetle. Here's your ruble. I found it.
You didn't find that. You took a ruble out of your pocket.
I didn't know. I swear I didn't.
Well, I... Thank you. I forgot there was still some kindness in the world.
I forgot too. There was still some beauty in it.
What do you want at this hour? It's after midnight.
It's me, Raskolnikov, don't you remember? I've got a valuable vanity case this time.
Fine hour this is to come around with your rubbish. But come in. Let's see this valuable vanity case.
Here.
It's heavy enough. What's it made of, lead?
Gold.
I'll believe that when I see it. Oh, what's the idea of making so many knots? I can't untie this thing.
I'll show you the idea.
Put down that poker! Put down that poker!
I will! Oh, please! On your head, you dirty, you old hag! Come in. Oh, good morning, Miss Parson. Fine day, don't you think? Very fine day, huh?
I didn't come up here about the weather.
Oh, no. It's about the money, yes. Well, I'll have it today. I promise I'll have it today.
Not about the money, either.
No, about what?
There's a policeman downstairs.
Policeman? What is he?
Here he is now. Ask him yourself.
Are you the writer of Skolnikov?
Yes.
Well, come along with me. You're wanted at headquarters.
There must be some mistake. Yes, there must be some mistake. I haven't done anything. What have I done?
Find out when you get there. Come along. In a few moments, Mr. Peter Lorre will bring us the climax of tonight's Mystery in the Air when Camels present Act Two of Crime and Punishment.
You've got to be good, really good, you know, to be a champion. You've got to have what it takes, and it takes plenty of skill, plenty of training, and above all, plenty of experience. Yes, sports champs have proved it time and time again. Experience is the best teacher. Cecil Smith, the Polo Star, thanks experience for his goals. Don Whitfield says experience made him what he is today, the world's outboard speed champion. That goes for Jerry Ambler, too. He says it took experience to win his bronc-busting crown. Yes, the champions agree that experience is the best teacher in the world of sports. And millions of smokers agree that experience taught them plenty about cigarettes. Back in the days of the wartime cigarette shortage, folks smoked brand after brand. They had to take whatever brands they could get. They compared those brands, became experts on the differences in cigarette quality. And that experience convinced thousands and thousands of smokers that Camels are their first choice. They learned that Camels are the cigarette with a rich, full flavor and cool mildness. Yes, smokers everywhere learned they prefer Camels to all other cigarettes. Result?
More people are smoking Camels than ever before.
Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel yourself.
Roderick Raskolnikov, trembling with fear, now stands before the clerk in the police station.
Raskolnikov. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, yeah. You owe your landlady 30 rubles, and you refuse to vacate the premises.
Is that why? Is that why I've been brought here?
Yes. Are you going to pay, or must we throw you out?
No. I'll pay. I'll pay tomorrow. No, it's
quiet.
My rent.
It's not funny. Quiet.
No, it's the rent, you see.
Quiet, I say.
30 rubles. No. That's why I've been brought here. It's wonderful.
Stop that shouting. No, stop it. What's going on here? Who's that maniac? He's a writer named Raskolnikov.
Huh? Oh, Raskolnikov. Just the man I want to see.
Why, sir?
I'm Inspector Porfiry.
Oh, Commissioner.
I read your excellent book about the crime and criminals.
Oh, you flatter me, sir.
Oh, no, I really mean it. You know, I thought I knew something about the subject, but your book put me and my staff in the kindergarten class. I must talk to you. Come into my office.
Thank you, sir.
By the way, perhaps you'd like to help us on a new murder case. It'll give you a chance to see how the blundering police work.
A murder case? When...
An old pawnbroker was killed last night.
Huh?
A well-known character named Leona.
I've heard of her.
Oh? What do you know about her?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Think you'll get him easily? Guilty man?
Who knows? We may have him now.
What do you mean?
We brought a man in this morning, a house painter. He had been working in a flat under Leona's.
Do you think he did it?
Well, it doesn't really matter. He was found with a pair of earrings. He had blood on his hands. Oh, of course, he has an explanation for these things, but he'll do as a suspect just to keep our records clear.
You mean that...
Of course, of course. But come, come, let's discuss your book. Let's see if your theory can be applied to this case.
My theory was... Yes. You wrote that ordinary men must obey the law because they are ordinary. But extraordinary men have the right to transgress the law.
No.
Isn't that right?
No, not exactly. But what I said was that extraordinary men shouldn't be judged by ordinary standards. For example, take Napoleon. If
I doubt if Napoleon murdered the old pawnbroker.
Oh. I'm glad my theories give you a chance to be witty.
If your theory is right, it would make it a lot simpler for us policemen. Your extraordinary men had some distinguishing mark.
Hmm?
Say a medal or a ribbon or a resemblance to Napoleon.
What do you mean?
Like yourself, for instance. But to get back to our murderer in this case, he was ordinary enough, all right. Nothing but a stupid coward.
What do you mean?
If he hadn't been in a panic, he'd have found the old woman's money. 1,500 rubles tucked away in the mattress. Instead, he took a lot of junk that's no use to him, and he can't unload it. I've got my men watching every outlet. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Inspector, you've promised to show me your blundering police methods, and you certainly have. You're holding a man who's probably entirely innocent just to keep your records clear, huh?
Well, the painter will do until the real murderer comes in, and he will come in. He'll give himself up through fear. Fear of the law or of God.
Oh, yes?
In the meantime, I'll just wait.
I admit I was furious, stupid, coward indeed. But then I realized that I wasn't a coward at all in the country. And in facing the inspector so calmly, I'd learned not to be afraid. Still, I needed money, and now I didn't dare to sell any of the old woman's stuff. I determined to try my newfound courage on the publisher of my book.
Sit down, Mr. Raskolnikov. Glad to see you. We had very nice response on your book.
Oh, that's good. I've almost finished another one.
Oh, is that so? Oh, you might let us see it when it's done.
Well, you see, as a matter of fact, another publisher, well, he has offered me an advance of 750 rubles on it.
He has?
Yes.
Well, the pirate, you're my discovery.
Well...
Look, I'll give you 1,000 rubles advance. Hmm? How's that?
Oh, that's fine. That's wonderful. Yes, it's wonderful. I took the money. I paid my landlady in full. I bought myself a whole new outfit of clothes. Oh, I was riding on top of the world. But then a disturbing thought occurred to me. Of course, the inspector hadn't suspected me for a moment, but undoubtedly he would find my name in the old pawnbroker's books. He might think it curious. I hadn't mentioned it myself. I decided to go and see him again, voluntarily. Yes, out of my own free will. That's what an innocent man would do, or would he? Well, anyway, I'm going.
The inspector will see you in just a moment.
Thank you. I'm in no hurry.
Oh, Mr. Raskolnikov.
Sonia, what are you doing here?
The inspector sent for me. He returned my Bible. He asked me a few questions.
Questions? What kind of questions?
About the day I went to the pawnbroker.
Did he want to know anything about me?
Yes.
What did you tell him?
About the money you gave me.
Oh.
And then he wanted to know.
Why? What did he want to know?
Before I knew what had happened, he made me tell him what you said.
Oh.
That she deserved to die.
She did, she...
The inspector will see you now, Mr. Raskolnikov.
Sonia, I must see you later. Where do you live?
Catherine Street. First house from the bridge, second floor.
I'll be over as soon as I can. Wait for me.
This way, sir.
Thank you.
Ah, Mr. Raskolnikov. I'm delighted to see you again.
Come to claim my watch.
Yeah. Your watch?
Come on, let's not beat around the bush. I hate to part with it, but I need the money, so... So I took it to the old woman. Oh, you know the pawnbroker, the one we were talking about.
Oh. Did you have dealings with her?
Did I? You know I had. You know I was there. Isn't my name in her book?
Oh, wait a minute. Why, so it is. Funny, I didn't notice it.
What are you trying to do, upset me?
Upset me? No, not at all. And I'm sorry, but there's no watch listed among her effects. I'm afraid it's still in the murderer's possession.
Well, thank you very much. I must be going
on. Oh, by the way, that's a new suit, isn't it?
Hmm? Yes, it is. What of it? Why shouldn't I be wearing a new suit, huh?
Things have taken a turn for the better, eh?
Yes, things have taken a turn for the better. I sold another book.
Congratulations. I hope you'll have some theories in this one that'll help me solve this murder. We're still holding that poor wretch of a painter.
Oh, here. Your real murderer hasn't come in, huh?
No, not yet. But I haven't given up hope.
Oh, you're very optimistic. That's good. Suspect anyone in particular?
Oh, I suspect anyone and everyone.
That's good.
I'll admit now that for a time I even connected you with the murder.
Me?
Yes. You know how a policeman's mind functions.
No, I don't.
I began piecing things in a pattern. Your desperate poverty, the fact you almost fainted when I mentioned the murder the first time.
Oh.
Your talk of Superman being above the law.
Oh, now I can see.
Your going around town flashing all that money,
yes,
which
yes.
I didn't know until just now came from your publisher.
You had me followed, huh?
Well, a matter of routine.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. If I were the guilty man, I'd be too smart to try to sell that junk. I'd have gone into the country and buried it under stone. You hear me? Yes, under a big, heavy stone.
So?
Come on, accuse me of murder if you like, but don't insult me by believing that I'd overlook 1,500 rubles in a mattress. Try your clumsy methods on halfwits, like that poor fool you're going to sacrifice, just to keep your records clear.
But I'm not accusing. I don't accuse a man I think is guilty if I have no proof. I just sit and wait.
Yeah, you sit and wait. Stop playing this cat and mouse game with me. If you think you have a case against me, come on, arrest me or bring me to a trial. I'll show you how.
Yes, I did.
Inspector,
I did.
This man just confessed.
Yes, I confess. I'm guilty. I'm the murderer. Punish me.
You're lying, you fool. You didn't kill her.
I hit her over the head with a poker. I hate her.
You idiot. You didn't even know about her until we arrested you. You didn't know anything about it until we beat it into you. Take him away, officer. He wants to go to Siberia that badly.
I'm guilty, I tell you. I'm guilty.
Get him out of here.
Oh, what a triumph for your methods, Inspector. First you try to make him confess, and now you try to make him believe he's innocent. Doesn't your conscience ever bother you?
No. Let the real murderer suffer from his conscience. It'll trouble him. He's no Napoleon. No, not hard enough. He'll come in, and I'll be waiting for him. I'll be waiting. Good luck.
Walking the streets. I don't know how long. I know it's late. I had to talk to you, Sonia. I may never see you again.
You're going away?
Yes.
Where are you going?
I don't know.
And why?
Because I'm free now. Yes, I'm free. Free to go where I please and do what I please. And
free? From what?
Police, they suspected me of the murder. Oh, it's all over now. Sonia, come away with me.
Did they find the guilty man?
They had him all along. He confessed this morning.
Who was it?
Oh, a painter who worked in a house. Why all these questions? Leave me alone. I've been questioned enough. Please put that Bible away. I don't want to be reminded of that old hag.
And Jesus said, take away the stone.
What stone? What stone are you talking about? How do you know I hid it under a stone?
It's the stone under which Lazarus was buried. Huh? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, thou hast heard me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried in a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth.
Sonia. Sonia!
You should kneel to me.
Have mercy on me, Sonia. I killed that old woman. I killed her.
Why did you do it?
I was mad. What shall I do now?
I don't know what to tell you. Because you have no faith.
But it, I did have faith.
Then I would tell you to confess.
Huh?
Atone for what you've done.
Confess to the police?
How else can you save the one who's being
confess
punished in your place?
Confess and go to Siberia and rot in prison, Sonia? How can you ask me to do that?
Because I love you.
Sonia, I know it. I know it now. I have faith. You have given it to me. You have made me see myself, as I really was, and just a coward who thought himself brave. All right, Sonia, I'll go and do as you say.
Oh, my darling. I'll wait for you. I'll always wait for you. Forever.
Come in.
Good evening, Inspector.
Good evening, Raskolnikov. I've been expecting you. I've been expecting you for quite a long time.
From September of 1947, it's been Peter Lorre starring in Crime and Punishment from Mystery in the Air. That's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Copyright the Swing and Big Band Preservation Society, Incorporated. All rights reserved.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio, KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big band swings.